I want to build off of something I talked about the last time I was up here. A few weeks ago, if you were with us, I talked about embracing uncertainty. I talked about embracing mystery in life. You know, that through my exposure with the Eastern Christian tradition, I learned the value of embracing uncertainty. That it's actually not something to run from, but rather something that can help us confront our limitations, recognize our need for something beyond ourselves, like God. It's actually in our awareness of what we don't understand that I think faith comes alive, not in our certainty that we get it. And if you want to hear more about that, I spent an entire talk talking about it. So feel free to go back and listen to that. You can find that talk on our website or our podcast feed. But the reason I want to come back to this is because it's almost a part of my own personal journey that I kind of came to this place of like, hey, maybe embracing mystery is the key for faith coming alive for me, a key for dealing with many of the questions I was wrestling with that I couldn't answer. But once I kind of leaned into that, it begged a different question for me. It begged a different question. If I'm leaning into uncertainty, how do I think about morality? If I don't have all the answers, if I don't have it all figured out, if life is not ordered neatly into the list of good and bad and right and wrong that I clearly know the answers to, how do I think about pursuing good? You know, I think Americans in general tend to rely on certainty quite a lot. I don't think I actually have to make an argument for that. I think you just turn on the news or go outside. I think it's just built into who we are as a culture that is individualists, as a culture that we build ourselves up by our bootstraps, encountering our limits, acknowledging we don't have an understand, in many ways feels un-American. At least for me, I grew up with a sense in all sorts of things, whether it was watching TV with the division of good guys and bad guys, or if it was in school learning good and bad behaviors. I kind of approached life pursuing good, being good, morality, in creating a checklist. It's where does this fall on the checklist? What's right and wrong, moral and immoral? And then my task in life is to kind of fall on the right side of that list. I've actually been watching this new show called The Good Life. I don't know if anybody's seen it, and I just laugh about how much that's the kind of the premise is like where you've ended up is like where you ended up on that checklist. It's just part of what we are as a people culturally. And what's more, particularly for folks like me who grew up with backgrounds full of attendance in churches, where morality isn't just up to us, it belongs to God, I think we've bred into us an anxiety around uncertainty. There's an anxiety that by saying I don't have it figured out, by saying I may not ever have it figured out, that we leave space for something to be watered down in what God may ask for us. That somehow by not having all the answers, I'm not fully embracing the truths of what God has for me. That we have a responsibility that we might fail to embrace and teach those hard truths, certainly for other people and somewhat for ourselves. In the end, isn't there just good and bad, true and right, that we either need to support or deny? Otherwise, could we not then argue that everything is permissible? Isn't an argument for uncertainty also an argument for moral ambiguity? I don't know if you asked those questions when I talked about uncertainty last week, but I asked those questions when I thought about uncertainty as a 22-year-old. So, when I encourage you to embrace uncertainty, to be clear, and I do, when I encourage you to acknowledge the limits of what you understand, when I encourage you to take a stance of humility that you might, and might is only to soften the reality that you absolutely don't have it all figured out, when I encourage you to do those things, I think it makes total sense if that provokes anxiety. It provokes anxiety in me. And so it brings me back to that question again. How do we pursue morality without certainty? Well, the first thing that's really helped me is learning a different way to ask questions. I talked about this a little bit in my last talk. I mentioned this concept that I was introduced to by this professor talking about the Eastern Christian tradition. It's something called divinization. It comes from the word divine, as in God. Divinization is the task of humanity to become more like God each day. In short, it is asking the question, how do I become more like Jesus today than yesterday? In the journey of life, how do I keep taking steps forward? This is actually an artistic depiction of a book called The Ladder of Divine Ascent by John Klismiskis. Pronunciation questionable. Something I read in this same time. The journey of life, how do I keep moving forward each day? It's not about crossing a threshold of conversion. It's not about clearly knowing the answer key to the moral exam. And the goal is not to reach some magic plateau of good or moral. No, it's to keep moving forward each day towards being more like and with Jesus. You know, when this was first introduced to me, it was super helpful because it gave me a different way to ask questions about morality. It wasn't about filling out my checklist. It wasn't about being certain what my answers are because I have them down on paper and now I know how to move forward because they're in whatever category I put them in. No, it was about a daily, moment-to-moment, interactive pursuit. Not asking what is good or moral in general. I think there probably is a general good and moral. But it's not about asking that question. It's about asking what is good and moral for me today, right now, in this moment. And in that same time I was exposed to divinization, I was also introduced to a concept from psychology that felt immensely helpful for taking something as abstract and weird as the word divinization and actually make it feel concrete. Like, oh, what does this actually look like in real words? And I say real words because it's funny, because it was a term from psychology. And it's the concept of adaptive and maladaptive behavior. So adaptive behaviors are behaviors that aid us. They help us deal with life better, have a healthier experience, and get more out of life. It is adaptive behavior. This is like, I would say an adaptive behavior would be exercise to deal with stress. That was a very adaptive way to deal with stress. This is opposed to maladaptive behaviors. These are behaviors that get in the way of healthy life. This would be like doing cocaine to deal with stress. I would say that that is a maladaptive way to deal with stress. In short, maladaptive and adaptive are the things in our life, the behaviors that make us more or less healthy, functional. However, the thing that I felt so helpful to me in this and unique is that determining whether something is adaptive and maladaptive is actually quite dynamic. It is not just an objective black and white checklist. An adaptive or maladaptive, what it is actually quite dependent on your age, the stage of life you're in, your personality type. Often what adaptive and maladaptive behaviors depend on who you are. And so a behavior in itself is usually, I wouldn't say all the time, but usually not inherently adaptive or maladaptive. It often depends on how it's being used. And that right there is a helpful starting point for pursuing morality without having to feign certainty. Now, so there'd be some behaviors, I would say, like, you know, cocaine use, that I would be hard-pressed to ever find a situation that that's adaptive. Like, yes, in a moment-to-moment, you could go through every moment-to-moment, and that would probably find itself on the maladaptive side. So this isn't trying to create some subjectivity. It's just acknowledging the dynamicism of our life. But determining whether it's adaptive and maladaptive does come down often to who you are and what's true of you. Like, for example, talking more. There are many people I know that to talk more in conversation would be adaptive. People want to hear your opinion. We want to hear you speak up. An adaptive behavior choice would be talk, speak up more. Now, here's the truth, is that is never going to be an adaptive suggestion for me. Ever. If you've ever been, like, near me, not even in conversation, but just near enough to hear my voice speaking, you will know that I don't ever have to be encouraged to talk more. In fact, I would say for me, what I feel like I've worked on is what is adaptive for me is developing a filter. Learning when I should speak and when I shouldn't. Speaking up for me would be maladaptive. And all to say is I've actually found this idea of maladaptive and adaptive helpful for me as I was trying to think about what I was wrestling with divinization. If I am looking at my life and my task is to move forward today, to be more mature tomorrow, healthier tomorrow, in the words of divinization, more like and with Jesus tomorrow, what does that look like? And I found these questions of assessing what is adaptive in my life that I should keep doing or include, and what is maladaptive, things that I should be working towards cutting out, to be an immensely helpful tool in navigating life and morality. So, I find myself most days starting with some kind of prayer. You know, I find myself often on my commute in my car asking the question, God, what do you have for me today? What adaptive thing should I do or keep doing? And what maladaptive thing should I work towards stopping? And I find this an immensely helpful way to start my day. You know, sometimes I don't really feel anything in that moment. It's like a question gets shot out into the universe for nobody to ever hear. But even in the act of asking that question, I find it helpful. But sometimes I will ask that question and actually feel like I get a response from a dynamic and living God. Something feels highlighted in my mind. Like I'll be sitting there and say, God, what do you have for me today? What should I be pursuing? What should I be cutting out? And all of a sudden, a person will pop into my mind that I treated poorly the day before. And I'll feel an urge to go apologize to them. And apologizing seems like an adaptive thing. Healthier, more like Jesus person would be owning the way we treat people poorly. And so that moment right there, it pushes me to do that. Or I often find myself drawn towards compassion in those moments. Particularly if I'm driving, I most days will encounter somebody that's experiencing homelessness on the road asking for money. And I really don't know what the moral checklist answer is. Should we give homeless people money? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. However, when I'm praying in the moment, God, lead me toward adaptive behavior, I almost always feel prompted to give money. Because in that moment, what's happening there is a releasing of my desire to judge and determine and decide whether somebody else is worthy. And then thinking about my money as my thing. In that moment, I have not encountered a time where I ask, should I give that person money, open myself up for feedback? And the answer was like, no, you shouldn't. It feels dynamic. You see, I think that this process, it's leading me towards this divinization or morality, towards health and maturity, towards a less self-centered life, compassion to others. But it is so different than creating a moral checklist. It's dynamic, it's contextual. And just to say, I think that this aspect of how Americans tend to think about morality is like an analog. I think it plays out profoundly in our relationship with the Bible. In fact, I would venture to say if you grew up going to church, this relationship of morality as a checklist most predominantly came out in how you were taught to read the Bible. It was my experience that often the primary use of the Bible was to help inform the checklists I have. oh, I came across the passage. It said you shouldn't lie. Lying is on the checklist. Do not lie. You know, and I remember actually a passage being taught to me as a youth. Is that a right good, a youth? I feel like that's a questionable. Doesn't matter. All right, we'll move forward. A reference being 2 Timothy 3:16, 17. The funny part is, somebody that spent my whole life in and around the Bible, I find my relationships with certain things evolving. Like I'll have great affinity for something, and then all of a sudden I'll have great, like I really dislike that passage, and then all of a sudden I'll find myself having an affinity for it again. And I feel this way with the passage I'm about to read. I used to like it, then I hated it, and I've come back around to loving it again. It's 2 Timothy 3:16-17. That every scripture is inspired by God and useful for teaching, for reproof, for correction, and for training in righteousness. That the person dedicated to God may be capable and equipped for every good work. It says it right there, right? That's what the Bible's for, equipping our moral checklists. No. You know, I actually believe everything that passage says. I believe the Bible is something inspired by God. I believe it is useful for reproof, correction, training, and teaching. Hey, look, teaching right now. Doing it. I believe all of that. But I don't believe that the Bible is a rule book, and I don't believe that it should be used as the source data for our checklist. Because honestly, if it was, it would be a pretty crappy one. It's actually really hard to read the Bible that way for many reasons. First off, it wasn't written to be read that way. But a big wrestling point in my life, and a big way that this felt untenable to me, is that there are hundreds, and I don't necessarily say that as an exaggeration. I've seen somewhere between 50 to 500 examples of places in the Bible where it seems to be contradicting itself. Like Vince talked about last week, if you were here. In one place, Jesus is called Prince of Peace. He says, blessed are the peacemakers. And then in five chapters before he said, blessed are the peacemaker, he says, I have not come for peace, but I have come with a sword. Or earlier this summer, I talked about how in one place Paul says all rulers were put in place by God. But then in another place, Hosea says that rulers were put in place against God's will. Or we see lying is prohibited, easy one. Except we see Rahab, who celebrated for lying to protect Israel's spies. James actually says she is justified by her work. The work of what she did there has justified her. Lying. We see oaths, swearing, like I promise you, condemned, but also permitted. Drinking, condemned, also permitted. Long hair, condemned, also permitted. I can go on and on and on. And I don't say this to destabilize anybody's trust in the Bible, although I kind of like that a little, to be honest. Says a lot about me, doesn't it? But rather how incredibly fraught it is to read the Bible looking for moral checklists that we can then feel certain about. I've actually found, maybe surprisingly, that these cases of seeming contradiction has actually shown me how helpful the Bible is. As a collections of records and stories from various different authors spanning hundreds of years, experiencing different highs and lows of the human experience, and looking to God in the midst of those experiences. I firmly believe the Bible doesn't contradict itself. It simply contains a lot of different examples of different people in different cultures and different situations coming to God and saying, what should we do? What is adaptive and what is maladaptive? And just how for one person in one situation, talking would be adaptive, but for me, it would absolutely be maladaptive. We see diversity in God's counsel. All of this doesn't make the Bible untrustworthy, in my opinion. I think it makes it dynamic so that it can stand up as a guide and inspiration even when life is uncertain. And my hope for everybody here, legit, Vince is like, so what is your hope when people pick up the Bible? We have these kind of conversations often. I said, my hope for everyone here is if we pick up the Bible, we don't scour it for the moral absolute to add to our checklist, but rather read it to see how trustworthy God is at leading people towards adaptive, full life. And I actually think God's character is actually most profoundly revealed in these contradictions. That he's the kind of God who would tell one group, largely of low status, peacemakers are blessed. But then another group, who's about to go engage the powerful in the status quo, that he didn't come for peace, he came with a sword. For as fraught as the Bible is as the source of a moral checklist, I don't mean to say it is absent of reliable moral teaching. No, it is powerful, inspired, helpful for reproof, correction, training, and teaching, and understanding more about who God is and what his character looks like. So we are more readily able to discover him guiding us today, guiding us towards apologizing to that person we wronged or seeing that homeless person we would walk by. So to close, I want to tell you about how profoundly pursuing morality without certainty has worked in my life. Discovering a life where those two things don't have to be one and the same. I can say I don't know to things. I can say it's not clear to me. I can say those two contradicting Bible verses both seem compelling to me. But in the moment, still ask God daily, what does it look like for me to be more and more like you? And look to the Bible to help create a framework for what God's character would look like so I'm attuned to see it when it comes up. Well, the first thing I think I touched on briefly, the first thing I've noticed in moving away from checklists and towards a daily appeal to God is I found my attention being drawn more to systematic injustice than it ever was before. The moral checklist for my church-going youth was about 90% personal morality. Don't have sex before you're married. Don't go to parties. Be nice to those in charge. And so that's where my attention was. However, since I started this daily divinization thing, I felt like God has drawn my attention more and more towards the brokenness of the world around me, not just the brokenness in me. I would say over the last couple of years, around half the time I stop in prayer in the morning and ask God this question, what do you have for me today? Where should I grow? Where should I challenge myself? Most frequently, I feel myself becoming more and more aware and open. Those two things are not necessarily the same, to just how much my privilege works to my advantage in the world. Just how quickly that customer service person responded to me. Just how easily I got respect in that meeting. We were talking earlier today about dress. We were just talking about how we dress because this is as dressy as I get. And we're talking about I work in my other job. I'm the only man I work with. And I dress objectively worse than everybody else there. At one point, my boss was talking about how, yes, our job doesn't have a dress code, but it's important how you dress because that's how people are going to perceive you. And I was like, I've never thought of that. I've never had issues with how people perceive me. And then I recognized I was the only man that I worked with. And so I'm showing up in a t-shirt and jeans, and everyone else is wearing blouses and things like that. And I'm like, huh, I don't think I would have seen that before. But preparing myself to say, Jesus, what do you have for me today? Where are you challenging me today? I feel like I've seen those things. You know, Vince and I are frequently in meetings with pastors, and there's something that we've heard several times from pastors of an older generation. And what we've heard is, in an exasperated tone, millennials just don't care about morality anymore. I'm on the older side of it, but I consider myself a millennial, but I certainly consider many people I know and love entrenched in the millennial camp. And Vince and I keep speaking up in these settings saying, I don't think that's true. It's just that for millennials, morality is not just about who you have sex with. Although millennials are in fact waiting later in life to have sex and getting divorced less than previous generations, I think the truth is that millennials care a great deal about morality, but the morality of how we consume, the morality of inequality, the morality of privilege and power, it's about our social responsibility to each other, to the world. Okay, my millennial rant is over. But I just want to say, and that this approach to prayer has solidified in me my belief that God cares just about the morality, just as much about the morality of our society as he cares about your personal morality. The second thing I've discovered in this process is I feel much less shame and obligation. There's something kind of empathetic and kind in my morning prayer times. When I go to God and I ask for help to pursue the things he wants for me and to weed out the things that are maladaptive, opposed to feeling inadequate and full of shame for seeing the empty check marks on my checklist, I feel like a patient and loving God meets me each morning with new grace and mercy for where I fell short the day before. And I have fallen short every day of my life. But then simultaneously, I feel full of hope and care for where I can go that day. You know, my old checklist system, there was almost something dispassionate. There's like a distant weight that the moral checklist left on me. It's like a bar that I could never quite reach. But this new approach has put me in connection with the God of mercy, who I felt was more likely to treat me like a loving parent treats their child when they fail, with a hug and loving reaffirmation that he still loves me. And he believes that I have so much potential for that day, and he wants me to keep trying. And kind of tied in with this, I've also felt far less concerned with judging other people. Simply put, when I go to God each day, and each day I realize all I need to work on, each day I realize how much more I need to grow as a person, I just don't have the same time or energy to care about other people's behavior. I'm pretty aware of what I'm working on. You know, I think in that checklist method, there was almost like, there's like levels of the checklist. Like I get these taken care of and I'm okay. That gave me space to turn around and like, I'm okay, so who is not okay? I just don't get to those places anymore. And I would also say my daily encounter with my need, the daily awareness of all I need to work on, I think it makes me more empathetic to what other people might be working on. Lastly, I want to just go back more directly to the question around the anxiety that pursuing morality without certainty, pursuing morality acknowledging you don't have it figured out, I once again, I'll say might to soften the reality that it is 100% true, that everybody in here believes something to be right and moral and good, that I believe you'll stand before Jesus at the end of your life and he'll be like, oh my gosh, I cannot believe how wrong you were on that. But does that mean or does that argue that somehow we're watering things down, that things are just permissible, we're just not being hardline enough? Well, I can tell you that in my experience, I've actually found that this daily request to God, this daily questioning of myself, what do I have to work on today, has been way more challenging than the checklist ever was. There's not a day that goes by that I don't feel like I have something to work on. There's not a day that goes by that I don't feel like God is challenging me in some way. You know, in my old approach, I would get to like good enough status a lot. They aren't perfect, but like good enough. Like there's a lot of moral issues in the Bible, like a lot of them. But there seemed to be a much smaller list, a more achievable list that people in church really cared about. Like don't steal, don't kill, and then pretty much the rest have to do with sex. And if I'm not doing those, I feel pretty good. You know, just something I've noticed, maybe as a little aside, maybe you've noticed this too, as I look back and I think about the things that like were, it's like there's like two checklists. There's like the big checklist that we can never achieve and then the little checklist that like we can achieve most of the time. And when I looked at that little checklist, I found the closer and closer I got to living out the white, middle-class, straight, married man ideal, the easier that list became. It took far less effort to keep that like important list together. I just think it's interesting, maybe you would find it interesting too, that the majority of things that the church communicates as most important are easiest for white, middle-class, straight, married men to live out. Just saying. Okay, I'll move on from that. I do not have a day where I feel like I'm good. I don't have a day that I feel like I have nothing to work on. That doesn't feel shameful to me. It feels true. And actually, daily acknowledging that makes it so much easier to acknowledge the things I need to work on. It's not like this hurdle of like, I have to concede that my list isn't complete before I work on things. It's just a given every day. And the funny thing is, I'm actually living out, I would say, the vast majority of the things that were on my moral checklist when I was younger. And not because they're like on the list and I really ought to, but rather because each day God has shown me that he wants good for me and wants adaptive and healthy life for me. And so when he prompts me in that morning, or when I stop in that morning and recognize, huh, I think it's really important to be careful about putting myself in situations with people that are not my wife, that it feels important to me. It's not because it's not like adultery is on the checklist. It's because God has shown me he is good, and he has firmly convinced me that that would be a maladaptive path to walk down. But you know what I've also found is that I feel challenged in so many areas that are absolutely tied to me being a healthier and better person. So many places that I feel challenged that we're never, ever going to make a checklist. Like the big thing I've been working on in the last 3 months is, how do I first understand and then ask for what I need in my relationships? Because if I don't ask for and understand what I need, I don't get it. And then I get resentful that my needs went unmet. That's not on a checklist. But that is 100% something that God led me towards that is essential for my life to feel full, to feel good, to feel alive, to feel more like who I believe Jesus longs for me to be. So now I dream about what it would look like for BLV, like us as a community, to all be pursuing morality in this way, to each be daily asking, where do I need to grow today? And it excites me for one, because I think you'll discover more healing and growth and change in your life by doing this, because I believe God is active and alive, and pursuing him daily will just bring far more of that good stuff than a checklist ever will. But it also excites me to think about what would it look like to have a community full of people who were pursuing morality incredibly courageously, but without the garbage and cruelty that relying on certainty and checklists brings into the equation. I think it allows us to have the kind of diversity we have here and not say this one size fits all, but rather each one of us can come from where we come from, be who we are, and then trust that God is reliable to challenge, grow, and meet us all equally and uniquely. It excites me to think about a community that can advocate for justice, to see the morality of our society as paramount as any personal morality. A community that can be free of the ugliness of religious shame and obligation. And a community that can exist without judgment of each other, for we're all too aware of our own need to mess with the ugliness of worrying about each other's. I dream of that for us. And this has, for me, been a bit of a game changer for my life. It is the thing that allows me to not lie to myself when life feels confusing or hard or I don't have the answers. But also, still courageously and fearlessly pursue a life of good. To not say, oh, well, it doesn't matter. I get to do what I want. It's not an experience with that at all. And that's what I long for all of us to experience, to be better people tomorrow than we were today, healthier people tomorrow than we were today. And the beauty of a living and alive God is that he leads us there. that it's not just like a means to the end, but the means of this is interactive with the God of the universe. If you guys want to stand with me, I'd love to pray. Jesus, I take this opportunity right now to just ask, and if you would like to ask yourself in your own head, God, what do you have for me? What is the thing I should be working on right now? What is something that's not true? Or needs to keep being true that would be adaptive in my life? More work-life balance, more space for rest, prioritizing like dinner at home, I don't know. There's gonna be 1,000 things that could be true here. Or what is there something that I should work towards getting out of my life because it is not serving me? We just take the space to acknowledge that every single person in this room has need, is imperfect. And Jesus, we ask in that acknowledgement, help to move forward tomorrow. That our life would be like a journey, like a ladder of divine ascent. With ups and downs, it's not linear. But over the course of it, we find ourselves becoming more and more like the person we want to be. It's kind of the cheesy cliche of like, if you want to compare yourself against somebody, don't compare yourself against another person. Compare yourself against the person you were a year ago. I note that is cheesy, but it doesn't mean there's not truth in it. And so for all of us here, Jesus, the things that you're working on, I believe that you don't just throw down a list of like 50 things you need to improve right now, but I believe that there's like one or two things in our lives that you want to challenge us in, to grow in or to cut out. Because that's about all we can deal with at a time is one or two things. And so I ask for help to figuring out what that is right now. Not because we ought to and we're really terrible if we don't, but because you want us to live a long, healthy, full, lived life.